On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about roads, bridges, transportation infrastructure projects that are proposed in the governor's two-year spending plan. According to the 511 construction projects map, 40 construction projects are currently underway throughout Wisconsin. Hundreds were completed last year amid the pandemic. How are roads where you are? What construction projects do you want prioritized in the next state budget? What one do you want a status update on? It's 800-642-1234. Craig Thompson is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Secretary Thompson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with our highways. The governor's budget proposes about $566 million in federal and state money for major highway projects. Tell us about the priorities there.
Well, when we look at the roads, highways, and really across the spectrum, the priority, the first budget of the governor's and this one, is really focusing on fixing what we have now. We've got a lot of roads at the local level, town, city, village, county, and at the state level that really were underfunded for decades. And so we're really trying to, the investments we are making, we're really trying to focus on really fixing what we have.
Well, you know, state officials expect the trend of reduced driving habits to continue well into 2022 fiscal year. How do you pay for all these road projects, these road repairs that you see needed all across the state?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we do fund transportation in Wisconsin really with user fees, and the biggest user fee of that is a gas tax. So as driving is down, the revenues from that are down. So for the last year, since the pandemic, we did experience, I think most people would just intuitively think, and they would be right, that we experienced less amount of gallons of gas being used. So we did try to do as much as we could to mitigate costs on our end. And then we also got some increased money from the federal government. All of the state DOTs did to sort of backfill that lost revenue. So for what's already occurred, that more than filled in for the lost revenue that we had. But we are making sure that we're paying very close attention to what the projections are. We have models that we update every quarter, and the spending that we're proposing, you know, aligns with the revenue that we intend that will come in.
Yeah, you know, the governor's budget does not propose an increase in the gas tax, which is, as you said, a main source of revenue for road, bridge, and transit projects. Is this problematic, or will you see more borrowing in the future?
Well, for this two-year period, we are increasing bonding slightly. Now, if you look at the last budget, we were able to, the governor was able to sign the first increase in ongoing revenue in a generation, and at the same time, drive new bonding down to the lowest levels by far in a long time. So as we looked at the next two-year period, the governor really wanted to make sure that we did not lose ground on the tremendous progress that we made in his first budget. But at the same time, did not feel that with what's going on within the economy and people's personal finances as a result of the pandemic, that in this budget was the time to ask for increased revenues. So we did issue some more bonds in order to, not slide back on the investments we made last time and make some new strategic investments. But still, the four-year bonding, if you look at both the budgets combined, is significantly lower than where we've been for the last 16 years. And with rates being at what they were at, we felt this was a prudent way to make sure that we could continue to make progress without having to ask folks for a revenue increase this budget.
We're talking with Craig Thompson, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Transportation, as we look at state transportation issues as related to the next two-year spending plan and how to pay for these projects. You can join in. What questions do you have for the Transportation Secretary? Are there transportation issues that you want an update on in your community? Priorities, 800-642-1234. Ron is joining us from Manitowoc County. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. Thanks. Number of sources that could be considered for revenue. In many townships, there are basically private driveways, which are considered public roads and receive state funding. Low-density residential cul-de-sacs are basically private roads for the people living on those roads which we support. Billboards certainly would be a source for revenue, because they would not exist other than for the public roads they are next to. And something like very expensive RVs in Wisconsin pay $120 per year for their license, while some of these truck drivers who would have the same weight as some of the large RVs would be paying in the $1,200 and $1,300 range.
Ron, thank you for your call and your insights there. Secretary Thompson, a couple issues there, starting with private drives and these low-density roads.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate Ron is definitely trying to think of different ways for us to fund what we have. And, you know, he brought up a couple different ideas there, private drives, billboards. Billboards are something that we do derive some revenue from already. But I, you know, I think those are all things we can look at to help at somewhat at the local level. I think overall, as we look at nationally, we're going to be, you know, General Motors has said that they're going to be making all electric vehicles by 2035. Ford is making significant investments that way. I know the Biden administration is doing what it can to encourage that for climate change. So I think at a national level, we're going to have to look at probably, in addition to maybe some creative things at a local level, like what Ron was just talking about. But I think overall, nationally, we really need to look at starting to transition to something like a vehicle miles traveled, where we continue funding transportation with a user fee. But at some point in time in the not too distant future, the gas tax probably isn't going to be the most sensible way to do that.
And so you would look for an annual mileage that people would drive, and that would be regulated at the federal level?
It could be. I mean, we pay a federal gas tax right now. And so if you went to a federal vehicle miles traveled, then you wouldn't have these state boundary issues and different things like that and trying to implement it. And then, whether it be agnostic on how you're powering your car, whether it's a hybrid, an electric, still gas, whatever it might be, it would just be, you know, more of a what the gas tax has really been a user fee in kind of a proxy for usage for a long time. But as we transition away from that, we're going to have to figure out if we're going to still use that same concept, how to do that when fewer and fewer cars are being powered by gasoline.
You mentioned electric vehicles, and the governor's budget would authorize $5 million in bonding for electrical vehicle charging infrastructure. Can you explain this priority?
Sure. If you look at a couple of years ago, the legislature and the previous governor had increased the registration fees on electric and hybrid vehicles. And what we're looking at in this budget proposal is that those increased fees bring in around $5 million a year. So what the governor's proposing is to dedicate about $5 million a year to electric vehicle charging stations. So there really would be a nexus with people getting that have electric and hybrid cars getting some value out of that registration fee that they're paying.
Zooming in here on Milwaukee just for a moment, the I-94 east-west, that expansion corridor, what does the governor's budget say about this and where you're headed on that?
Sure. As I said, like the priority in this budget and the previous really, for the most part, has been putting our resources into fixing what we have. And in this corridor, that's true too. But there is $40 million in bonding proposed in this budget to rebuild the corridor, but also to harmonize it with what's on each side, which is the Marquette Interchange lies on the south side, or on the east side, and the Zoo Interchange on the west side. Mm. And if you look at this as a corridor, which it really is, it's just being done in stages, it's four lanes going each way in the Marquette, coming the other way, and four lanes from the Zoo. And you have to merge coming each way, which makes it one of the most dangerous. We have 2.5 times the accident rate as the rest. So for that 3.5 mile stretch, we are looking at rebuilding, modernizing, and making it the same amount of lanes that we see on each end of that corridor.
We have Transportation Secretary Designee Craig Thompson as our guide as we work through infrastructure priorities, construction projects slated in the next 2-year budget that Governor Evers is proposing. Where should Wisconsin find money to fix its roads? Do you support raising gas taxes, installing tolls, or changing the state's road network in another way? How do you think we should maintain our roads and bridges? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Craig Thompson here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing proposals on the table for the next two-year state budget in the area of transportation. And we want to hear from you. What updates do you want on construction? What are your thoughts on rail and bus transit investments amid the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have Transportation Secretary Designee Craig Thompson, who's with us for 10 more minutes. Jeff wants to talk rail in La Crosse. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I was wondering if there's any chance that the effort towards high-speed rail will be restarted?
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate the question. And as far as high-speed rail, I think that's something that we're going to have to continue to look at. Again, I know the Biden administration, I think, is going to be putting an emphasis on rail and others. But I will say, in the meantime, we've been really pleased. We've had really a successful year this past year in our area of rail and harbors, of getting some federal money. We got about a $30 million grant for your area, but all the way down to add another line from the Twin Cities through Milwaukee to Chicago on the Amtrak line that now is the Empire Builder. And there's one line that goes through that way, but it goes all the way out to the West Coast, all the way out to Seattle and back. And so sometimes the stop times aren't quite as reliable as people would like. So with this money and the joint venture that we applied for with Minnesota, we're going to make some track improvements on our side near La Crosse and some other areas. And Minnesota is going to be doing some on their side. And the idea is, it's called the TCMC, Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago, that will add another daily round trip that goes only from the Twin Cities to Chicago. So we're really excited about that it's going to, it should be on time, should be much higher, and there's going to be shuttles back and forth. And so from the passenger rail, from that standpoint, we're excited about that. And we were also able to receive some federal grants last year to increase the routes on the Hiawatha line, which is one of the worst.
I was going to ask that. Yeah. What's being done on the Amtrak Hiawatha service?
So we're going to be doing some improvements on what's called the Muskego Yards there that will separate some of the rail there, and we're working with Canadian Pacific, who has a line on there too that operates freight. But right now pre-pandemic, and we're going to be heading back to it soon, there was 7 round trips a day. And the idea is that we're working again with Illinois, and they're making some upgrades on their end that will increase that eventually to 10 round trips a day. So that we think will be a major improvement as well.
Chris is with us in Milwaukee. Chris, hi. What would you like to ask about?
I want to talk about expanding the freeway in Milwaukee. Number one, Milwaukee has almost the best freeway rush hour travel times for cars in the country. On the other hand, it has some of the worst travel times for mass transit in the country. Now, in order to expand this freeway, what you're going to have to do is take out not just some, but more of the cemetery that is a veteran cemetery. And for what? We already have some of the best travel times. People outside of Milwaukee don't want all that money wasted in the city. People in the city don't want that money wasted in the city. I don't know who wants it. Hang up and listen to the answer. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Go ahead, Secretary.
Sure. And so, first of all, about the Veterans Cemetery, we will not be disrupting any graves anywhere at any of the cemeteries. So, and even with adding the lane, the footprint is going to change very little. There's, I think, going to be about 3 or 4 businesses affected and less than a handful of residences. So we're not really affecting the footprint size very much there at all. But again, it is, we have 2.5 times the rate of accidents there that on similar highways in that area. So what I would agree with her about is that we need to do better in transit. But the only way we can do that is we've got to get, well, we could get more money from the federal government for it too, but we would also get funding that's going to have to go through the legislative process. And that's been a little hard to achieve. The governor tried to increase mass transit operating in the last budget by 10%, and that got knocked down to 2%. In this budget, we're proposing some more increases and to try to help Milwaukee County and other bus systems with capital replacements. But so we do need to do better on transit. But I do want to assure the caller that none of the graves will be disrupted at any of those cemeteries. And we do just want to make it a modern, safer connection where all the lanes are the same amount on that stretch.
Craig Thompson, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, as we look at transportation funding projects within the state. Secretary, what does this budget do for public transportation, for walking and biking infrastructure? What do you see going on there?
So we've got numerous provisions in there for it. We're proposing a 2.5% increase in each year for local governments for mass transit operating. We're proposing a $10 million program for bus capital replacement so that they can replace or upgrade their buses. We're proposing returning complete street legislation. So in areas where it makes sense and local governments want to, then we're redoing the streets. We do them to include bike accommodations and others. We're proposing to give local units of government back the authority they used to have, which was the power of eminent domain to create bike paths. We've got our electric vehicle charging station funding that we talked about. And then we're also including $15 million in there for what we're calling critical infrastructure grants for locals, where we're seeing weather events that have caused persistent flooding or things like that they can be more proactive in that regard. So I think the governor's budget really tries to lean into those issues pretty heavily.
Julie is now with us in Lancaster. Julie, hi.
Hi. I just had a question about prioritizing and planning. For example, I live near Lancaster, and the entire stretch of County K was paved between Lancaster and 18 in 2019, and then completely tore up and repaved again in 2020, which to me appeared to be unnecessary. I think that I was just wondering what your ideas were for better planning and more efficiency, and I will hang up as well and just listen. Thank you.
Well, I'd have to go down in Lancaster and see the part that Julie's talking about, because she's right. That shouldn't happen. We should not be repaving that stretch and then having to do it again 2 years later. What our planning model is we've got a very robust asset management system where we really do look at what the best treatment is statewide through a very data-based approach. And it really does try to look at what you will see sometimes now. And people think that's a relatively new road, and you may see us out or the locals out crack sealing or doing some of those other things. And what we found is for a very little amount of money during what we call sort of the sunshine period, if you get out and do the right treatments at that time, we can make that area of roadway last a lot longer, because as we know, it's the cracks that moisture gets into and different things like that end up causing the biggest problem later on down the road. So we really have an asset management approach that we try to apply statewide to make sure that we are planning and making the best use of our resources.
You completed 375 projects last year in a pandemic year. Do you find that you will be able to accomplish as many this year?
I believe so. And I was really I couldn't be more proud of the people. You know, our folks that work for the department, but there's so many in the private sector that are actually engineering and outbuilding and so many just great people that were out doing it, that we were able to keep all of those projects going. And as a matter of fact, with the decreased traffic, we were able to finish a lot of those projects ahead of schedule and under budget. So we were very pleased by that. It actually put us in a position where we received some federal redistribution money, because some other states weren't able to spend the federal money and they scoop it back up and redistribute it to states that could. So that garnered us about another $50 million last mm-hmm. year. So I think it was people being smart, following the protocols, being safe, allowing us to do that. And I'm fully anticipating that we'll be able to do that. And hopefully for all of us, with vaccines rolling and all that, things will be better in this upcoming year.
Let's bring in Mike now in Vilas County with insights. Mike, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling because, you know, back, I was a state trooper at one time, and when I worked in Wisconsin, our governor then in the legislature changed the law to ban these speed cameras from using in enforcement. And I'm up in Vilas County now, and I look at the number of crashes and fatalities we've had, as well as statewide. Why can't they change the law so we can use these cameras in stretches of highway where it's not practical? They're safe for an officer to be out there trying to make traffic stops. You know, there's people driving 80, 90 miles an hour regularly, especially on these county roads up here. And I've had three fatals in the last couple of years near where I live. You know, if they put a camera up and just cite these people that are driving 80, 90 plus miles per hour, it would generate a lot of revenue that would benefit the counties themselves and the state for traffic problems. Plus, it would reduce the accidents and deaths on our highways.
Mike, thank you. Secretary.
Well, Mike, I appreciate your time as a trooper. You know, that is a policy decision that the legislature and governor could make. But I will want to point out that what Mike's saying, we did see, despite traffic being down this last year, we had fatalities being up. And that was we saw that throughout our Midwestern states and really throughout the country. And it was precisely because of what Mike said. People were driving very erratic. We issued almost more than 1,500 tickets for people driving over 100 miles per hour. So it is a problem, and we want to make sure that people are driving safe.
Secretary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Craig Thompson is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes here, looking at areas of the budget that address climate change. You can join in. What do you want the state to tackle with issues related to climate? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers' two-year budget proposal introduced last month includes dozens of environmental measures. Leading up to his spending plan, the governor's task force on climate change put forth 55 policy proposals aimed at cutting carbon emissions and helping our state mitigate the effects of climate change. What do you think of these efforts to deal with our changing climate, water contamination, and air quality? Should more be done, or would the money be better spent elsewhere? 800-642-1234. Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. He chaired the task force. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I am incredibly excited to talk about the climate change provisions in the budget.
Yeah, and before we dive into the particulars, overall, how does this budget do in terms of climate action, in terms of environmental justice, cleaning up water? Like, how much does the budget hear your climate task force?
I think the budget was an incredible task as far as making sure that the recommendations that were submitted to be put into the budget, making sure that as much as we could possibly get in there, made it in there. This includes the transportation sector, coastal support, agriculture, support for local communities, making sure that we address issues like flooding. And, you know, for people who, you know, may seek to question spending, I think that we have to look at this as an investment. We have to think about resilience planning, because climate change is here and it is having a devastating impact on communities all across Wisconsin. You know, when people buy car insurance, when people buy homeowners insurance, you don't look at it as wasteful spending. You look at it as necessary spending in the event of an emergency. And in Wisconsin, we have been subject to so many of those emergencies already. And I'm just excited that these issues are finally getting the attention that they deserve. And there's also attention paid to the utility sector, carbon market. There is not a community that will not benefit from the climate change adaptation and mitigation strategies outlined in this budget. All across Wisconsin, and especially the job training program. That's one of the key components of this as well, as we seek to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, let's start with energy initiatives. The governor wants to increase the amount that utilities pay into the Focus on Energy program by $100 million. What is this program?
So the Focus on Energy program has been a program that's been well known across this entire country, and it has survived administrations of both parties. And I will say that Focus on Energy provides an opportunity for people to be able to have access to renewable energy, low-income customers. And that's the important part here, because too often lower-income communities are priced out of being able to live a sustainable life that they would help them in terms of their own health, and also help us all as a broader community. And so with the Department of Administration weatherization program, we are offering enhanced incentives for eligible customers. This includes low-cost debt financing for clean energy projects, for residential, for commercial, and even governmental customers. And I think that one of the important parts about this too is the on-bill financing for those people who may not be able to, because it's difficult a lot of times to front the upfront costs. And with on-bill financing, it will give opportunity for ratepayers to be able to just tackle on that expense to their regular utility bill. So this is incredibly exciting because with the doubling of the required utility contribution focused on energy from 1.2 to 2.4%, like I said, this would generate an additional $100 million in funding for the program so that we can expand. You know, I've been to a number of conferences across the country and been able to speak about these issues, and people know about our focus on energy programs. So it's important for us to continue to lead and to strengthen the program so that even more people have access to it.
But Lieutenant Governor, you know, since this program is largely funded by the utility companies, wouldn't they not just pass additional costs onto ratepayers?
Yeah, so the way that it is structured, because that is absolutely a concern. When I was first learning about the program, that was one of the questions that I had. But with the way that the program is structured, that is not the case. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I had the same exact questions because that is that would be the obvious response from a company who seeks to maximize profits. But the protections and are put into place. They're baked into the cake to make sure that customers don't incur additional obligations.
Well, let's talk coal for a moment. The federal data, it shows Wisconsin gets about 40% of our energy from coal power plants, and it can be really difficult for utilities to transition out of coal, away from coal, because of the large capital investments in plants that have to be paid off. What is this budget doing to help utilities close coal plants, move away from coal energy?
Yeah, and first I'll say when it comes to coal, my question then becomes how much of that coal comes from here in Wisconsin? How much of that 40%? And the answer is zero. We bring all of our coal in from other states. So there are additional costs that ratepayers here in the state are incurring because of the fact that we have to ship in these dirty fossil fuels from other parts of the country to meet our energy needs. This is about energy independence, and we are working to help them transition. But this is actually a move that most utility companies are making on their own because it is turning into a financially sound decision for them as the cost of renewable energy starts to balance out. You see many customers and also many shareholders who are calling on their utility companies to adopt more climate-friendly strategies, understanding that the devastating toll that coal has wreaked on our economy, on people's health as individuals, and also overall health of communities, it is not worth it at all. And people are starting to make the right decisions. Like even here in Wisconsin, before we came into office in 2019, many of the larger utility companies already made commitments to shift towards 100% renewable energy or to get away from fossil fuels. Just because, like I said, the cost, we have finally reached a point where we are tipping the scales where it is cheaper to use clean energy to produce our electricity than traditional fossil fuels that have been destroying our communities.
We're with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes discussing strategies in the next two-year budget proposal that aim to fight climate change. With your insights, 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us from Delafield. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a concern about the property tax structure in the state and how it incentivizes big ag interests to basically do the wrong thing and remove forest lands. The property tax structure is set up to really incentivize crop growing as opposed to forestry. And you can take a drive around the state this time of the year, and it's just unbelievable to me to see the number of trees that are being cut down and fence rows between fields just removed and piles of brush all over as these big ag interests just keep destroying more and more of our forest land, and we have a tax structure that incentivizes them to do so. And is there any talk about changing that? Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. Lieutenant Governor, what is that push-pull between agriculture and reforestation?
Yeah, I really appreciate him bringing that issue up. Forestry is a big part of our climate change task force report as well. I'm always open to more suggestions. I always want to hear more from people about how we can make better decisions here in the state. And this was a problem before we came into office, and it's something that is certainly that we certainly need to address. And I think that the governor first tried to chip away at the issue in the budget 2 years ago with the ag and manufacturing tax credit, recognizing that much of the ag tax credit was being given out to more wealthy and larger farming interests. But here in the task force report and in the budget, there's the reauthorization of the Knowles-Nelson stewardship. Yep, of Knowles-Nelson stewardship program, which has been around as long as I've been alive, basically. And with the reauthorization of the stewardship program for another 10 years, which includes $70 million in annual bonding authority, along with other investments that would go directly to conservation and forestry. And in addition to the program, the governor makes investments in supporting forestry efforts, as well as addressing CWD while we're at it, with chronic wasting disease. And we also want to make sure that we are doing all that we can to expand outdoor opportunities for recreation. And that means maintaining our forests and doing exactly the opposite of what's been happening.
Pete is with us from Eau Claire and wants to talk coal for a moment. Pete, go ahead.
Yes, I drive truck, and one thing I do is I haul fly ash out of some of these coal plants. It's a component in cement or concrete, actually. But we also haul, particularly down to Alma, we haul bicarbonate of soda in there. And when I've talked to the engineers about what it's used for, he says it's combined with the bicarbonate of soda is combined with activated charcoal and aqueous ammonia in their scrubbers. And he says what's coming out of the smokestack is cleaner than what's coming out of the tailpipes of our cars. So I'm wondering why we have to shut them down.
Thank you, Pete. Lieutenant Governor.
Even if it is cleaner, doesn't mean that it's safe. And when you change this to a conversation about volume, the volume of coal that's being burned and where this is particularly happening. This isn't distributed over all communities equally. And I'm not sure if I'm ready to accept that that is actually cleaner, given the fact that cars have catalytic converters, which make those emissions a little more clean, not clean as we need to be. And that's why we want to electrify our transportation sector, which is another important part of the budget. And I want to say that altogether, we should be moving away from fossil fuel emitting practices. Like, that is what we should be doing as a state. And I don't think that, even if that were to be the case, I don't think that just because it may be a little bit more clean that we should continue down that path, especially given the impact on people's respiratory health in lower income communities and communities of color that has been well documented for decades.
Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes explaining Governor Evers' environmental priorities in the next 2 year spending plan. Are you worried that the effects of climate change will damage your community, your home, your livelihood? Are you concerned about PFAS or large animal farms contaminating drinking water? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. There are dozens of initiatives in the governor's biennial budget proposal addressing water quality, addressing climate change. One example, he wants to set aside about $2 million for statewide monitoring and testing of PFAS, the hazardous forever chemicals contaminating our water. And Lieutenant Governor Barnes stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's look closely here at water contamination and PFAS, these forever chemicals. How big of a problem are PFAS in Wisconsin, and what would this budget do?
PFAS continue to be a huge problem, not just here in Wisconsin, but in many other states as well. And the worst part is that we're still learning so much about it. And so in this budget, we want to ensure that access to clean water is universal. That is a problem that you hear no matter where you go in the state. This was one of the things that I talked about in 2018 when we were campaigning, when they talked about issues that would bring Wisconsin together, and water was chief among them, because if you're in urban areas, you may have issues with lead contamination. If you are in more rural parts of the state, it may be nitrates, PFAS contamination, phosphorus. The list goes on and on and on. And in addition to making sure that we have water quality programs, the governor, for the first time in nearly a decade, advanced a number of administrative rules to address water contaminants like PFAS and nitrates. And the governor has also convened all of our agencies, as well as advocates, local government, and industry leaders to produce state action plans on PFAS contamination. And so I think that besides this budget, the governor declared the year 2019, declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water. And we brought issues to the forefront that had not been brought to the forefront. And now we have a comprehensive plan to address PFAS contamination, including over $705,000 in segregated funding for fiscal year 21 to 22. Another close to $750,000 in 22 to 23. And this is to create positions and four-year project positions within the Department of Natural Resources for the development and the implementation of an action plan. And also almost $1.5 million in the first year, and about $700,000 in the second year for statewide monitoring and testing for PFAS contamination, including another $10 million each year of the biennium for a municipal grant program so that local government can have the tools that they need to test and remediate areas that have been impacted. And additionally, another $1 million for the collection and the disposal of firefighting foam that contains PFAS, because we understand that this can create a financial barrier. It's like many other tools that we use that we thought were helpful to us, like asbestos as a flame retardant. And now we see how PFAS contamination is in firefighting foam. And this is a problem because people are developing certain illnesses. We have seen increased rates of cancer because of PFAS contamination. It's another critical investment that we have to make for the health and safety of people in Wisconsin.
Well, you know, 2019 was the year of clean drinking water declared by Governor Evers, but is our water any cleaner in 2021? How do you know that we've made steps?
Well, we certainly made steps. The first step to fixing any problem is admitting that a problem exists. And I would say the governor pushed the legislature to move, because soon after you saw the speaker created his task force on water quality. And it was as if, you know, there weren't the years before Governor Evers came into office, this problem didn't exist. And that's been the problem. And so we are certainly making, we're making strides. I won't say that we're where we need to be, because that would lead us to comfort. We shouldn't be comfortable at all until we have totally eliminated the threats that exist within our water. So I would say that things are certainly getting better. And I will add that we certainly have a long way to go because of years of mismanagement, years of neglect. Can't solve it all in 2 years.
Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. We're looking at climate initiatives in the governor's 2-year budget proposal. Kelly is joining us from Cascade with thoughts on it. Kelly, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for the work you're doing on climate change. I'm an occupational therapist, and I'm also a climate action coach. And I'm specifically interested in helping people figure out how to align their lifestyle and passion with climate action. And I'm wondering if the Department of Workforce Development has a sector that's dedicated to helping people who are looking to kind of pivot their career choices into something that's more sustainable, that would align with, you know, their interests and their skill set and climate action.
Kelly, thank you. Lieutenant Governor, how do you align careers that, affect climate change in a positive direction?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite questions about the topic, because another answer I have for people when they ask, well, how do we connect climate change and combating climate change to communities that may be a little bit more resistant? I always talk about the economic piece. I talk about the fact that we are going to save money overall at the state, and we're going to create jobs in the process. And under the Wisconsin Fast Forward framework for training for green jobs programs throughout the state, this is how we'll help encourage individuals to engage in conservation and environmental career paths specifically. There's also a $4 million renewable and clean energy research grant that'll be administered by our Office of Sustainability and Clean Energy that we created in 2019, which will be funded by the Environmental Fund. So there are many opportunities to get people involved to help them lead with their passion, to lead with their desire to see Wisconsin become a clean energy leader. We are going to need so many people to make this happen, to get us to the place that we need to be of 100% renewable energy, to lead us into our clean energy future. And so we want to make sure that the opportunities are there for people to do that. Truly appreciate that question. And I hope that we get you on board in one way or another.
The governor is proposing creating an Office of Environmental Justice, which was recommended by your task force. What would this office do?
Yeah, the Office of Environmental Justice would engage in consultation with communities that have been on the forefront or that have beared the brunt of climate change impacts, including our First Nations. And I will add that Wisconsin, save for Indiana and possibly Ohio, may be the only Great Lakes state without an environmental justice office. And so this just sort of gets us on par with our neighboring states to make sure that we are protecting the resources that we have. We are fortunate and blessed to sit on Great Lakes. We are surrounded by three bodies of fresh water. But that means we have a responsibility. And we also have a responsibility to the communities who reside in these areas. We have, which is every area, to be honest. And when choices are made, be it coal burning power plants, where they are placed, issues like the one oil refinery that we have in the state, and we saw what happened in 2018 in Superior with the multiple explosions. We need to make sure that communities that are directly impacted get the justice that they deserve. And sort of levels the playing field.
You're breaking up, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Just ahead, we talk with a public health expert about experiences during the 2014 Ebola epidemic in West Africa and what it can teach us in the fight against COVID-19. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.